So Mark was a very bright kid, very sweet kid, freshman in high school, no trouble with alcohol or drugs, respectful, kind, helpful to others in need, solid family member from a great family, consistently struggling with low grades, sometimes some difficulty with fidgeting and interrupting and that sort of thing in class. We'd get him in a bit of trouble, but teachers liked him so much that it was never anything severe. Problem was, he didn't have much else. Sports, arts, nothing. Not because he didn't seem to be talented, because he just couldn't pay attention long enough to get there. You know, one of the issues that we talk most about in my line of work is attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. And today I want to talk with you about the diagnostic criteria, but more importantly, I want to talk with you about how the disorder sort of plays out. And even more importantly, I want to talk with you about the hidden danger of ADHD. Hi, I'm Scott Brown. I've got some thoughts and some stories. Come talk to me. So I want to jump right in with attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. And there are three types of ADHD. There is the inattentive type, the hyperactive type or impulsive type, and then the combined type. So let's just review symptoms relatively quickly, because you can look these up online. If you do look them up online, you'll want to look up DSM-5 diagnostic criteria for ADHD. The symptoms are this: inattentive kinds of ADHD people make careless mistakes. They struggle to pay attention to detail. They have a hard time paying attention. They don't seem to listen when they're spoken to. They fail to follow through on tasks and instructions. They exhibit poor organization. They avoid and dislike often tasks requiring sustained mental effort. They lose things that are necessary for tasks or activities. They're easily distracted, often having unrelated thoughts that distract them. And they often are forgetful in everyday activities. About 75% of the kids who are just inattentive type are girls. And these are kids that tend, if we're not really careful, to fall through the cracks, because again, they are often very sweet, bright, kind kids that the teachers love, and they don't cause any trouble. And the teachers even think, hey, she's paying attention. I see her looking up at me. I see her sometimes writing things down. I see her paying attention to my lectures, or I see her book open and she's reading it. And what the teacher doesn't know is that when she's looking up at her, she may be thinking, a student may be thinking about what she did last Saturday night, and she's drawing or doodling on her notes instead of taking notes. And that when she's reading her textbook in class, she has to start at the same paragraph 6 times to even get through that one paragraph. On the other side, the hyperactive or impulsive type tend to fidget or tap with hands or feet. They tend to squirm in their seat a lot. They may get up out of the seat a lot of times when they're expected to remain seated. They feel restless, sometimes feel like there's a motor running inside of them. They have difficulty engaging in quiet leisure activities, like simply sitting still and watching a movie or reading a book. They talk excessively, often blurt out answers, and they have difficulty waiting their turn and may interrupt or intrude on others' conversations. Not going to surprise you to know that about 75% of these kiddos are male. These are the ones most likely to show up in our office because they're causing the most trouble. Sometimes they're seen as disrespectful, which in a way they kind of are. The problem is that they can't control it. The thought comes into their head to pop off or to say something sarcastic to a teacher or a fellow student, and they just say it. It's not really a controlled decision that they make. It's just, it's in the head, it's out the mouth. And that's important to realize that, to remember that. So those are your fundamental symptoms. Along with those include the fact that symptoms have to appear before age 12, and the symptoms should be present in more than one area. Not just home, not just school, home, school, other activities. Symptoms need to be present in more than one area of life. Now let's talk about the way ADHD plays out, because it's really important that you hear this. Very, very often I will have a parent or a teacher say, you know, this kid doesn't have ADHD. And this kiddo will go down into the basement and play video games for hours and be perfectly happy. And if they had an attention problem, that wouldn't be happening. Well, that's not exactly true. You see, there are different variables that present in a child's world that determine or at least significantly affect how their ADHD is shown. Let me give you a couple of examples. I can take a kiddo with a moderately moderately severe case of ADHD, and I can plug him, I'm going to make this one a boy, we're going to say he has combined type, I can plug him into a basement, a nice finished basement, with a really great video game set up, and a large bag full of Cheetos, and a 2 liter of Mountain Dew, and he'll be good for hours. In the quiet of that basement, no distractions, right? Or the flip side is I can take another kid with a relatively mild case of ADHD, and I can put, let's make this one a girl and say she only has the inattentive type, and I can put her by a classroom door in the class, by the door, right after specials, right? So elementary school child, right after music or art or PE or library visit. And I can sit her by the door while other kids are walking up and down the hall and the teacher's lecturing about the American Revolution or about spelling words. And even though her case of ADHD is not as severe as our friends in the basement, will lose her more rapidly. So things like extraneous stimuli, enjoyability of the task, severity of the ADHD, these things play a significant role in how the ADHD is manifested. Along with whether or not it is inattentive type or hyperactive type or combined. So it becomes relatively more complex. Now, the third thing I want to talk with you about is the hidden danger of ADHD. When we talk about ADHD, we tend to think about school, right? We tend to think about how's the child doing at school. And that's a very valid concern. And a lot of our referrals for evaluation for ADHD come from teachers and counselors at school for children that are struggling. And there's not much question about that. But there's a hidden danger with ADHD that I think we often don't read about, but it's very clearly there. And it looks like this. The child progresses through early childhood, and maybe mom and dad notice some hyperactivity, or maybe think that the child has a little bit of difficulty paying attention, but it really starts to show up in school-aged childhood from 6 to 12. And this is a very important time because during this time, we like the child to develop a sense of industry. And by industry, we mean we want this child to be able to act on his, her, or their world and see the effects of their action. We want them to be able to begin to master things in this 6 to 12 range. We want them to be good at some art. We want them to be an expert in some collection or some historical facts. We want them to be good at athletics. We want them to know more about tornadoes than anybody else in the family. We want them to have this sense of industry, because the opposite of industry is a child who has a sense of inferiority. And a child with a sense of inferiority very often feels like they just don't have anything. I'm not really good at anything, is something I've heard from several children. I can't really do that. I'm not good at sports. I can't draw. I'm not very good at learning. I'm not good at music. I kind of wanted to play the piano, but it really bored me, so I had to quit. I wouldn't practice at whatever, so mom and dad quit signing me up for the team or paying for lessons. The problem with this, of course, is that if these children move to age 12 and they don't have a sense of industry because they haven't been able to pay attention and focus well enough to develop a sense of expertise, to develop that sense that they can act on their world and see the effects of their action, then they move into high school shortly after that, just a couple of years after that. 14, go into high school, not really having any area of expertise, not academics, not sports, not the arts, music, visual arts, not even board games or club sorts of activities. And now they're in high school and they don't really have a peer group because they don't really have anything they've mastered. They don't have any place where they've developed a sense of industry. They don't have anything, if you will, that they're good at, if you'll forgive my bad English. And that means that these children, at higher rates than the general population in the high school, are at-risk kids. They don't have a group to hang out with. And you and I both know that in high school, very often, the most accepting group there are kids that are struggling, kids that don't do well academically, kids that may be involved in alcohol or drugs, or may have legal problems. And very, very often, you'll find those to be kids who don't have a sense of expertise. They don't have a sense of industry. And because of that, they don't have a way of developing an identity. This is who I am. I'm an artist. I know about these things. I'm good at school. I'm an excellent speaker, debater, painter, musician, football player, lacrosse player. They don't have that. And so then they really are more likely to become at risk. And that's the hidden danger of ADHD. The good news, we can treat it. If you're concerned about these symptoms, if you even think it's possible, take your child to your pediatrician, let the pediatrician know what your concerns are, and let the pediatrician guide you from there. Mark and other kids like him that I've treated, we have seen tremendous changes in their lives. Going from kids who are struggling with school and with any other activities and with making friends to kids who feel so much better, begin to develop friendships, begin to master activities, really have a sense of being able to act on their world, developing healthy identities. Just a quick trip to the pediatrician's office. I appreciate your time. I'm Scott Brown. Thanks for coming to talk to me.
Dr. Brown is a licensed psychologist. This show focuses on general parenting advice. If you are concerned that your child might have a mental or emotional illness, please seek help. Your pediatrician's office is a great place to start. Come Talk to Me is by Priority Care Productions. If you like today's episode, don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review this podcast. To learn more, visit pcpeds.com or see the show notes in the episode description. Thank you for joining us and join us again next week for Come Talk to Me.